Hello and welcome to the Dan Assor Show, inspiring and insightful conversations with event professionals. The Dan Assor Show is supported by headline sponsor Jonas Event Technology, an award-winning event registration supplier for organisers of trade shows, exhibitions and conferences. The show's official venue sponsor is conference and exhibition venue Business Design Centre, which has just become B Corp certified, showing its high standards of social and environmental impact. The show is also supported by TF Connect, Tarsus Group, Terrapin and 19 Group. Today, my guest is Jo-Ann Kellaway, International Industry Ambassador for Freeman Company, the world's largest exhibition services, logistics and technology company. Jo-Ann lives in Sydney, Australia, and is the founder and former CEO of the Info Salons Group, which in 2018, and after 31 years of leading the business, she sold to the Freeman Company. The Info Salons Group today is now involved in over 750 events per year worldwide, assisting major event organisers such as Informa, Reed Exhibitions, Messe Frankfurt, VNU and Diversified Exhibitions with the development and growth of their events. Jo-Ann is on the Digital Innovation and International Partners Committees of UFI and was a previous board member for the International Association of Exhibitions and Events in USA and the Exhibition and Events Association of Australia. The wide-ranging conversation includes Jo-Ann's journey as an entrepreneur, the challenges of building a business whilst juggling the demands of being a parent, her experiences of gender bias in the exhibitions industry and how she overcame them, what excites her most about the impact of digital innovation in the events industry, the biggest challenges facing the industry today, and what she loves most about working in events and exhibitions.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to Jo-Ann Kellaway. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you, Dan? Sitting here in Sydney, Australia, as the sun is setting over the harbour. It's very pretty.
You make us all very jealous, Jo-Ann. I mean, having said that, I'm sitting in London and it's finally at 8:24 in the morning. A nice sunny day. Well, it is out my window, so I'm lucky with that. So as you know, Jo-Ann, on these things, because I know you referenced it in one of my previous chats, I like to look at the background of people's rooms I'm interviewing. And if I'm not mistaken, I can see some ships or boats or sailing boats.
Yes, yes. My husband and I are mad sailing enthusiasts. Ah. We love sailing. I mean, Sydney's just the most glorious place to sail. And, you know, at the moment, it's whale season. And so we have these enormous humpbacks passing along on their journey up north to warmer weather. And so we are very lucky. We love to go out on the weekends, even though it's quite cool. Cold, very cold for Australia, probably not for you. And we watch these incredible mammals just coming out and breaching, and it's just the most stunning, wonderful thing. And we love sailing, so we do it quite a lot. We're very lucky we have a beautiful boat here to go with.
Lucky you. Maybe that's an exclusive. Do people know you're into sailing in the trade show industry? I'm not sure.
I don't know. Some people know, because when they come, it's funny, because I'm in Australia and I know so many people from around the world.
Sure.
Whenever somebody comes to Australia, they ring me up. Oh, you wouldn't believe I'm in Australia, because it's so unusual, right? It's not like London where everyone goes over every week. Sure. And so they ring me up. And so normally we say, come out on the boat or do something like that.
Yeah.
So there's a few people that know.
Very good. I could try and ask you a really clever question and try to ask you to relate the trials and tribulations of the trade show and exhibition industry of going out sailing. What's the comparison?
not much. Not much at all. Unless it's very, very windy.
Choppy.
Well, it's not choppy. It's usually has a huge, you know, mountain of like what looks like a mountain of water coming towards you.
Yeah,
that's sickening. So I've gotten over my seasickness. I've got my sea legs finally.
Good. So we've got quite a bit to talk about. So we're going to crack on. If I'm not mistaken, it's been just over 5 years now since the sale of Info Salons.
I can't believe it was that. It's that long ago. Yeah. I think it's because COVID was in between.
Sure.
And I always say to everybody, we can't count COVID.
Yeah. You know, all right, like, so we're saying 3 years.
I didn't age those 2 years either.
It's true, isn't it? It is strange. I'm sitting here thinking,
it feels like it was just some vacuum of weirdness that went on.
Yeah, no, it's strange, but it has been 5 years nonetheless. So you've had plenty of time to reflect.
Yes.
I want to just take you back quite a few years. Sorry about that. I understand that you set the business up in 1990. Is that right?
Yes, I was 2 years old at the time, yes.
I wasn't even born, honest. I want to actually take you back a little bit further, actually, just before that, maybe sort of mid to late 1980s. God, people that are listening are thinking, wow, didn't know people could be so old. I'm referring to myself. That sounds very rude. Tell me about the moment that you came up with the idea for the business. What were you doing at the time?
Okay, so it wasn't my idea. I would love to say it was totally my idea,
sure,
but it wasn't. I was in Paris. Yep. I'd been traveling around Africa for quite some time doing programming work. That's what I did. And then I got to Paris and I knew I wanted to go home to Australia, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I thought I would go and see an IT event. And I went to the Paris exhibition halls and I walked in and I wanted to see this IT event and see what the latest tech was. And I was given a plastic card with a mag strip on the back and my name on the front. And I was so impressed. And then I had to scan it through this door, these gates to get entry. And then at every booth, an exhibitor zapped me. Well, I thought this was fabulous. Why haven't we got things like this in Australia? And I went and asked to see the owner of the company, who just happened. I mean, it was a fluke. He happened to be there. And I asked him for a job. I said, I'll work for nothing.
Yeah.
So he said, all right. He just happened to need someone who could speak English quite well, put me on. And I ended up working there for years. And it was called Info Salon. So yep. That's why it's such a funny name. It actually in French means information technology for fairs. So that's how the name came about. After a few years, I wanted to go back to Australia because I wanted to go home. And he let me take it back and he kept a percentage of the business. And so I started from absolutely nothing out of the back of a house. And I went to see some exhibition organizers of events that I'd previously been in, but as an exhibitor. And I think they thought that I was going to ask for another booth. So they let me have a meeting with them.
Yeah.
And I explained the idea. And luckily, the organizers were very receptive and they actually allowed me to present to the Organizers Association of Australia, and they loved it. And that was in December, early January. And I thought, well, I'll have a whole year to get the business, you know, like get it all sorted, because I was still translating the software all into English and everything. And then, the first show was in April.
Yeah.
And NOPEX, which was the National Office Products Expo. That goes to show you how long ago that was.
and the rest is history. So I just wanted to... So
the rest is history.
Interesting what you said there, because we always talk about serendipity at trade shows and exhibitions. And actually, a serendipitous moment, if that's a phrase, led to you meeting the gentleman that obviously ran, you know, set up Info Salons. And you say it was a coincidence.
That's right.
You say it was a coincidence. So it's interesting.
It was. And
sorry.
I went to see tech on the booths.
Yeah.
And I was floored by the tech out the front of the event.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing is, Dan, he was amazing. Just to let you know, he actually came out to visit us a couple of years later and he gifted us back the share.
Yeah.
And so he'd seen how much we had done. I mean, we had rewritten the entire software into get a load of this. It was very, very, very progressive at the time. DOS. We'd rewritten it from PIC to DOS.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so, it was a time of huge growth for the exhibition industry here in Australia. And we rode that wave. It was just extraordinary.
Hi, I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Just going to take a brief pause to tell you a little bit about the Dan Assel Show headline sponsor, Jonas Event Technology. Jonas Event Technology, or JET, are an award-winning supplier of event registration dedicated to providing event organizers with a seamless registration experience and excellent customer service, as proven by their current NPS score of 71. JET provides a full registration solution for trade shows, exhibitions, and conferences, removing the stress of event registration so that event organizers can focus on making their next event the best yet. Visit jonas.events for more information.
Another marine reference there. You rode the wave. We've gone from sailing to riding the wave.
There you are.
So if you had not gone to that Paris exhibition, what do you think you...
I would have just taken up another tech. Prior to leaving, yeah. I was the CEO of, this is going to tell you a lot, of a very small company here in Australia, but it was the first ever desktop art. It was called Clip Art Australia.
Yeah.
And you could purchase this clip art so that when you were doing your latest desktop publishing that had just come out, you could use this clip art. So I probably would have gone back to just a technology of some sort.
Sure.
And hopefully something new and exciting.
Yeah, no, I'm confident of that fact. So you took it back to Australia. I know you obviously had partners with you who helped you sort of build the business.
Absolutely.
You could have, however, what you think to be the best product in the world, but you still got to have that confidence, that fire, that ambition inside you. The framework that thinks, actually, I can do this rather than go off and work for somebody else, which is fine. I have the security. I don't know if you had a young family at the time. Yeah, lots of people have to make a decision to go for it. What gave you the confidence to allow you
at
to do
that? At the beginning,
yeah.
At the very beginning, we were too busy to have even think about that. So because the industry was just taking off here,
yep.
It was exploding. They had just built the new Sydney Exhibition Centre at Darling Harbour. They never had one before. So this was all just happening all at the same time. So we were so busy trying to keep up and grow it and everything else that I didn't really stop to think until about 10 years later, when okay. I realized by then I'd had two young children, and the eldest was 5. And I realized that we already had some ridiculous market share, like 90%.
Yeah.
We were never going to be able to grow anymore because the exhibition industry itself had kind of topped out.
Yeah.
Unless we went overseas. And that was the defining moment. I had to go, okay,
yeah.
Are we going to do this or are we not going to grow this business and create an international business? So another serendipitous moment occurred. My husband sold his business very well, and he was an absolute workaholic and he was exhausted. So he said, I'll take a year off, look after the kids and enjoy myself.
Yeah.
And you can throw your whole self into the business.
Okay.
So that was the first thing. And this all happened at exactly the same time. So he became the sole caregiver of the kids. The second thing is that China was really taking off. Asia and China was really taking off in our part of the world. So I wanted to try it. I want to go there. And one of our business partners didn't want to go. So this was a crossing, and we just said, okay, those of us are going to stay. So one stayed. We have to do this or not. So one left, we bought her out, and the other one stayed till the very end. So it was very exciting. At that point, I knew exactly, I had defined in my mind exactly what the company looked like. And it was really extraordinary how many people tried to talk me out of it.
Really?
Lots of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. don't go. You shouldn't go. You'll lose so much money in China. It's a mess. Everybody copies you. None of that was wrong, by the way. None of that was wrong.
Yeah.
It does take a lot of money. They do copy you. It is really hard. But, no, we did incredibly well. Again, riding that wave. And it, just the image was so clear to me. I knew that if we didn't keep growing, we'd go backwards. You can't, I don't think anyone can just stay flat.
I
don't know. I mean, businesses don't go like that. They either go like that or like that.
No, absolutely. Good point. And I just a follow-up question. I guess there were moments, or maybe not, I don't know. I mean, when you doubted yourself at any point, you know, when you sort of took the decision, because listen, you've sort of glossed over it. All right, your husband's, you know, you had the privilege, luxury, whatever you want to call it, to stay behind, look after the kids. It's still a big decision, right? You know, it's still.
It was actually, I didn't realize it at the time, but, you know, women, I mean, mothers.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this happens to men too, but I don't. And this was a long, this was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it was way before it was like sexy to do it. And so, you know, women were, I got so much flack from the women here.
Yeah.
More than the men. I mean, the men were going, oh, he's so lucky. I wish my wife would do that. But I'm not sure how many actually would have done it. And then I felt guilty. I had this guilt about not raising the children. So, you know, people always say, you know, we need to balance out the workload. You know, we need diversity. We need more women in CEO positions. I agree. But it's not for the want of trying to get them. We try. But a lot of women still don't want to do what I did.
Yeah.
And it's because you have that, maybe it's innate, you know, I don't know, a mother thing. I mean, you feel guilty, you feel bad, but what can you do? Something you want to do. And my girls thrived under my husband, thrived.
Yeah.
And they now have an incredible relationship with both of us.
Yeah. And I guess they saw you, they look back and they see you, you know, as a role model, female role model, obviously as you're their mother, but also as a role model to go off and do what you did. So I think it's...
They're both incredibly successful in their own careers, actually.
And I'm sure that's come partly from seeing you do what you did, right, I guess? I don't know if you've ever had that conversation with them.
I hope so.
So...
No, they're great.
So just generally, I mean, there would have been times outside of the family consideration where you... might be sitting in China or another far-flung for me, but not maybe for you, part of the world where you think, what am I doing? You know, this is, you know, because we're, you know, the path is never, as you say, the path is sometimes riddled with ups and downs.
Lonely. People, you know, you're traveling a lot, you've got teams, but your teams don't want to be with you every night for dinner.
Sure.
So, you know, you're in hotels a lot, you're on planes a lot. You know, you're just traveling. Did I often question myself? Yeah. The only time I really questioned myself was in Turkey. So we opened up an office in Istanbul and everything was going all right. But then like almost a war started and that was quite scary. You know, we had to get out of there. We had to get our team out. You know, it wasn't great. So that was actually, I'd never questioned myself as far as the actual business itself.
Sure.
But I did get to a point where I decided about, so now probably about another 8 years, so 18 years in, that I wanted to sell the business because by now my daughters were making noises about not wanting to go into the business, right? So one's a nurse, a clinical nurse specialist. The other one's, you know, in design. They didn't want to go into that. So that's when I thought, well, now what?
Yeah.
What am I going to do with it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was no one in Australia that was big enough to buy us. And I started to speak to friends of mine in America who said, well, you've got a real problem because you're the face of this company. You can't be. You can't sell something that everybody thinks is just you. And so that was the first, and I mean, I had incredible mentors, by the way. The mentors, the men in this industry that opened up and told me what they did and how they did it. It was just fantastic. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
They were men, because they were all men back then. It's so good to see that there are more women entering this industry on a C-level, but still not enough. So I encourage all women to do it. But, you know, they said to me, if you want to sell your business, you've got to think, okay, I want to sell it in 5 years, then you've got to start now getting everything. Or in 10 years, you've got to start now.
Yes.
So that, you know, getting rid of me as the be all and end all, really trying to promote my CEOs in each different region, really trying to bring them up on social media as well, and pushing them, always taking them to meetings with me, whereas before I potentially didn't do that. So that was incredible. Changing the business so that it could work without me.
You are listening to The Dan Assel Show, inspiring and insightful conversations with event professionals. The Dan Assel Show's official venue sponsor is conference and exhibition venue Business Design Center, which has just become B Corp certified, showing its high standards of social and environmental impact. For more information, visit businessdesigncenter.co.uk. Be notified first about new episodes by following me on Apple Podcasts and Spotify platforms, and by subscribing to my YouTube channel. Search Dan Assel.
We've spoken about sort of being a female business owner briefly. You know, there are organizations now in the trade show and exhibition industry like Women in Exhibitions. You know, some would say, God, you know, it's 2023. Why do we need them? You know, surely everyone should be on the level playing field. What's your view?
I actually think that too. I actually
do
think that.
Okay.
I mean, I understand it. I understood at the beginning. It was really nice. I thought, wow, that's great. And I think there still is potentially a place for that in a general industry event. But I went to a CEO industry event recently, and they had that on the side. There was a women's, you know, stream. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's weird, because it's a CEO event and we're all supposed to be the same. So I thought that was, you know, that was a bit weird. By the CEO level, surely you all get together and you all have exactly the same issues, and we all do. So, you know.
Yeah, I think possibly the idea.
What was great is we saw a lot of men wanting to come to ours because it looked more interesting. So, which again was silly, because we're saying, well, why aren't we all doing it together? You know, so that was good.
So what more generally do you think, or do you think there are still issues? Do you think there's still a glass ceiling? I mean, you could talk about this for society as well as the exhibition industry, but...
Yeah, I don't think there's a glass ceiling. Yeah. I really don't. I don't think there's a glass ceiling anymore. And if there is, I think women make it for themselves. I think we've really got to support each other as women. You know, so many times the people that knocked me the most were other women. Just terrible. So you've really, we've got to support each other. But, you know... We did everything. We had, in our China office, we had mother's rooms for feeding your children, because the grandmothers would bring the babies in, because that's how they do it over there, and allow people to keep working. We had, you know, shared desks in Australia. You know, we did all alternate hours and, you know, share a job and all this, and we still only got about 5% of our women back after they'd had kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think we still have a long way to go, and maybe that's it will come, but I'm not seeing it yet. The ones that are getting there, who are in the CEO level, are absolutely driven, and that's why they're there.
Yeah.
And they're great. They're terrific. But, you know, they're absolutely driven, and they do well, really well.
So I think, in summary, a bit more work to do, but what you're saying is that, you know, if you're driven and passionate about your subject, then you can definitely succeed, push those doors
absolutely
open.
Absolutely.
I want to move on to a topic area which is obviously central to what you were doing, what you are doing now, the likes of UFI. So I know you are a judge on the UFI Digital Innovation Awards. And I think
I love that. It's really interesting.
Which I think you've just announced, actually, one of the winners.
Yes, we have.
Questex.
Time.
So, and I know this year's topic was digital innovations that build business impact.
Mm.
This is quite a big question. What excites you about the impact of digital innovation in the industry?
Okay, first of all, I'm excited because there is some. So,
fair enough.
I mean, there were.
Yeah.
Let's face it, there were years and years and years and years, and everybody knows this, where exhibitions looked exactly the same and have, you know, you could see a photo of an exhibition in the early 1900s and they look exactly the same as now. So organisers are really now wanting technology. You know, I mean, event tech's not just nice to have. It's essential now, and everybody knows that, and they're really pushing the providers to do better and better and better. And that, to me, is incredibly exciting. And now I get really shitty when people say to me, oh, exhibitions are all the same. They really are not anymore. And our and organizers are bending over backwards to do the best that they can. And that's why it was so exciting that an organizer won that that event this year. And I just think technology is going so fast and is so much a part of all our lives that we're accepting it better as well. And I see incredible things coming out. Freeman, who I am the industry ambassador for internationally outside of America, although I do also wave the flag for them there at industry events too. They do incredible technical things for events and conferences. I mean, the whole if you think about the company Apple and what they're providing now for everybody.
Yeah.
So this is just mainstream. They've got a million things that they've brought out, but two that I love. One is called Vision Pro. So it's a bit of a bulky device at the moment. You have to wear it, but it's not blocked out like virtual reality. You actually can still see everything around you like glasses, but you can see an overlay of virtual reality on top of the actual product that's sitting there. So now you can walk onto a booth and see the exhibitor can put up, you know, what the thing looks like when it's working, or expand the image, or, you know, I mean, it's incredible. So you can overlay virtual reality on real reality.
Is that augmented reality? I always get confused with all the different.
It's like augmented, but it's like augmented on steroids. Yes.
Richer experience.
So I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. The augmented reality of the past, you know, like, you know, there were those little games and things would pop up and all that. But this is completely different. So those things that popped up were not see-through previously.
Yeah.
This is all see-through on Vision Pro. Yeah. So that really excites me.
And I was going to ask you about
things where they're more interactive. Like Freeman did a thing called AMD, just one little plug for them. AMD, it's a medical event. And they had the entire stage and everything set up so that they could do incredible enhancements on the way the presentations went, the things that people actually experience sitting in the audience. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing evolving in our industry, and it will make it so exciting for us.
Yeah.
And it'll be exciting for younger people too, who will be wanting that and just expecting that as they walk down through an expo, you know, aisle. And they will want all that interaction.
Absolutely, I agree. It was definitely. However, I think, you know, you come back to the point that trade shows look the same for X amount of years. I still think there's something to that, but obviously all of this will just enhance the experience. I want to ask a question around registration. Be remiss of me not to. What does good look like when it comes to registration and sort of attendee database management, all that sort of thing that you've been involved in, are involved in?
Good looks like, first thing that springs to mind, easy. Like I just don't understand why it can't be so easy. You go up, it scans your face, it knows who you are, bang. you know, to me, that's what good registration on site feels like. You don't have to stand in big queues. You don't have to fill your name out on a piece of paper. All that is just, you know, I find that very frustrating.
Yeah.
I also think that databases that of what the organizers are creating is just essential. And if you get the chance to have a look at the UFI award, you'll see what Questex has done with theirs, which is excellent, excellent. You know, it's about using it and understanding it way more than just getting people to tick something on a registration form.
Sure.
So if they've already registered with you, if they've gone before, I mean, it's just the same old things we've been saying time and time again, and yet still people don't do it. You know, they ask too many questions on the rego form, so people don't answer them correctly. We can track them through your website, your event website. We know what their interest is. We know what they're looking at. We know what sessions they're booked for. All of that allows us to automatically create an understanding of that person.
Yeah.
And then by layering on information over years, you know, which exhibitors they went to, what companies they work for, and this kind of information can be layered and layered till you get a really deep understanding of what that person wants to see. You can create way better meetings for them. You can create better shows for them. You know, I feel like I've been saying this for 10 years.
But it's
exciting that it's getting there.
Yeah, I guess what we're saying is personalization as well is really important. And, you know, the tools, the tech available allows us to do that more or ever more. And, you know,
absolutely.
These days, the visitor to a trade show and exhibitors are becoming more discerning about the decisions, you know, they make as to where they're going to attend. So I think, you know, curating something that seems at least specific and personal to that individual is important. Would you agree with that?
I think, yeah, I absolutely. 100% agree with that. Yeah. And, you know, we're still humans. And I think one thing that COVID taught us is that, and I know we're doing this on Zoom, but I would have much preferred to do this with you face to face.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
And that's what we really like as humans. And we still kind of require that to really build our trust in something.
Sure.
And when you want to purchase something, you want to trust it. You want to know that it's going, you want to increase that level of trust. And I still don't think anything is as good as that face-to-face interaction to make that happen. And even young people feel that. I mean, all those people were saying, this is the end of events now. Everyone's just going to do all virtual and all online. But it's not. It's come back stronger than ever.
Yeah.
And I hope we seize this opportunity and make and really beef up our technical advances and make it really interesting for young people so that we don't lose them.
Yeah.
While we have them, this is what we should be doing. Yeah.
I'm going to get on a plane and come and see you.
I'd love that. We can go sailing and see the whales.
Yeah, well, maybe. It sounds exciting, whether I want to do that in reality. But anyway, so what do you think is the biggest challenge facing the trade show industry today?
Okay, so the biggest challenge is still maintaining the younger audience, and that's actually what I just said.
Yeah.
So prior to COVID, we had a Net Promoter Score NPS, the industry, of some ridiculously dreadful, I don't know, minus 50 or something. And it was terrible. And we were all desperately trying to figure out what to do about it. And a lot of people were saying, like, we would ring no shows and say, why couldn't you get there? Or something else came up, you know. And even friends of mine would say, oh, no, I never go to shows. I don't like them. I'd say, why not? Have you ever been to one? No, but, you know, I don't like. Oops, this is the kind of thing we're getting. And then COVID hit. And then we suddenly went, we really need to, you know, get out there and see each other. So when the doors open, out we went, and we flocked out. We couldn't wait to go. People were going to exhibitions that had never been before. Young people, old people, everybody were going. It was, we were getting attendance records. And I just think that we're not going to keep those figures. This is my fear, the fear that we have, if we don't cater to the new young audience that's coming. And to cater to them, we have got to use what they use at home.
Yeah.
And that is better technology, get them, give them experiential. We use that word all the time, but we really need to give them experiences. You know, yes, it's great because they can feel it and taste it and see it, but more than that, they need enhanced experiences, and that's what event tech can do. And I hope they do. So that's my fear. That's the challenge, that we just rest on our laurels and go, see, we told you, and go back.
Yeah.
The way we were, that hopefully that won't happen.
So probably not in 20 years, but if someone's walking into a trade show in 20 years time, I understand what your hope and expectation would be, but what do you think they're going to look like? Do you think 80% the same of today? What's your sort of vision?
I think there will still be areas where exhibitors are, right? There will still be exhibit areas. But I don't feel like there's going to be walls. I feel like it'll be completely interactive. We'll be able to see things that are going on, you know, way better than an augmented reality.
Yeah.
We'll be able to, you know, things will come up in front of our eyes saying, you know, 50 meters away is that brand that you bought on the street last week, and it will bring us in. And I even believe that there could be areas where speaking engagements are actually there on the booths as well. So right now, you know, everybody goes to the conference center and then they come back to the event. So I don't know. I think there will be much more interaction in those two areas too. And I really like that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel that there will be way more interactivity in not just in a physical sense, but in a digital sense as well as we move forward. I really believe that it will look like that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Just as I believe we'll be driverless cars, and you know, so I think that's happening too.
Yeah.
I just hope it happens. Yeah, 20 years, why not? Yeah. I think it will.
I'll see you there. Just coming to the end of the conversation, I just want to ask you a couple of questions. In terms of your sort of proudest moment, you know, people might say, oh, it would be maybe the sale of the business a few years ago, which I guess is a proud moment. But outside of that, what do you think your biggest achievement, proudest moment has been sort of working in the industry over the last 30 or so years?
I think my proudest moment was making an incredible success of the international business.
Yeah.
You know, so remember I told you 90% of our market share was Australia at the beginning. We didn't lose that market share, but 10 years after we went internationally, even though we still had 90% of the market share, that was only now 10% of our entire business. 90% of our business was coming from international.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary. So we could never have grown the business like that if we'd stayed put. Yeah. And I think that was my proudest moment, seeing how incredibly well all the international businesses had done.
Yeah.
And, you know, and my team were amazing, you know, and they used to love going over to all the other offices, like the Australian team. It was fun. They helped so much in opening the international offices. I was always proud of my team. They absolutely outdid all of my expectations. You know, they would put their hand up and say, I'll go and live in Hong Kong for a year. I'll go and live in Dubai for a year. It was just amazing.
Yeah.
They really were fabulous.
Yeah.
Couldn't have done it without them.
Thank you. And if you've got someone in front of you now, you know, a young student, graduate, someone that's thinking about coming into the events industry, what would you say to them? What have you loved most about it? How would you inspire them to, you know, take this route rather than go off and do something else?
Yeah, so this industry is non-stop. The deadlines, the stress, it is non-stop. So if you're a bit, you know, you can't sit still and, you know, you can't just sit at a desk, this is the best industry for you. It's the best. It just never stops. You know, there's one show after the other, after the other. It's 16 shows all at the same time. And it's just great. From that point of view, it's such a thrill.
Yeah,
I love that. And the other thing I say to people that always ask me this is, how often do you get to see something built that you have designed or grown or imagined? Like, so you go, you spend however long it is trying to get the show off the ground, and then it opens and there it is, and it's so incredible. I mean, not just great for the organizers, but for all the suppliers too. It's a real thrill to walk down the aisles of something that you've been involved with and you see it right there in front of you. Yeah. I love that feeling. It never gets old.
Fantastic. What's the future hold for Joanne? What's coming up?
Well, you said we did talk a little bit about mentors. I had brilliant ones. So I am doing a bit of that. I love it. If anyone's listening, please reach out to me. I love to mentor. I love to give back. I do it for free. Just buy me a coffee occasionally. Yeah. Well, I didn't want anyone to think it was a plug, you know.
I didn't think that. I didn't think you were going to get your rate card out and go, I charge $10,000.
No, I do it for free. I do it for free. But I love it. I love it because my mentors were fabulous to me and I want to give back to the industry. So I love that. I love being involved with a company the size of Freeman. It's very different from having my own business. And I'm semi-retired, so it feels quite nice just doing what I'm doing at the moment.
Good. Joanne, thank you so much for your time. You're very giving. I could listen to you all day, actually. Your passion for the industry, the people you work with, the people that have helped you, your family, everything you've done comes across even over the screen. Yes, it'd be great to one day meet you in person. But it's, you know, what you're doing for the industry, what you've done, it definitely comes across in droves that you're very passionate. So thank you for giving up your time today and we wish you the best for the future.
Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. The Dan Assel Show is grateful for the support of headline sponsor Jonas Event Technology, venue sponsor Business Design Centre, and event industry supporters TF Connect, Tarsus Group, Terrapin, and 19 Group. Be notified first about new episodes by following me on Apple Podcasts and Spotify platforms, and by subscribing to my YouTube channel. Search Dan Assel.